Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH. Know Your Risk Radio is hosted by Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often volatile markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us for yet another of the most scintillating hours in finance radio. And got a great show planned for you today. This show is going to be all about dedicated to making sense of it all. And we do the daily dots every single day, trying to explain what happened that day. But I do think it's important. And for those of you that listen to the show every week and have listened to it for some time or listen to it often or whatever the case may be, you've probably heard us talk a lot about all of that, but if you guys are anything like me, in an environment like this that is so askew to historical norms, both economically, markets, market functioning, all that kind of stuff, I find it to be almost a daily need for me to contextualize things, right? Part of that's probably how my brain works. And I think it's why people have told me that I'm good at using anecdotes or good at making things simple. And I don't say that to talk up my own abilities or anything like that. But I think the reason for that is I have always believed it intellectually, but it's also kind of the way that my brain is wired, which is I want to break things down mentally in my mind to the point where I understand them on a very simplistic level. And it's one of the things that I think about comprehension that in so many places, people get completely backwards, right? It's the most esoteric language. And I've talked about this on the show many times, but it's the most esoteric language. It's the guy that uses the most words we've never heard before. It's the guy that uses the most multiple alphabet, why am I just blanking out right now? What are you, an acronym, right? It's the terminology. It's the complex words. Now, I think a lot of times in dynamic environments like a market, and I don't think there's much more dynamic environments or dynamic ecosystems than the U.S. stock market. It's unbelievable, right? The amount of cross currents and all that kind of stuff. So sometimes that language is necessary just because there's not another term, right? Meaning if you're talking about gross domestic product, you're going to call it GDP. There's not another way to call it. You know, you can go and later define what it means, but you know, sometimes using that language is shorthand, but all too often that language is like self-serving in a way. Right, it makes them sound really smart. It makes them sound highbrow. Where it's funny to me because everybody acknowledges that Buffett's one of the best to ever do it, and that Munger is one of the best to ever do it. And if you listen to them, right, their explanations are very simplistic. And that's always resonated with me. If you really understand something, you should be able to explain it to a 4-year-old, right? If you really understand it, because you're able to simplify it. I think the more you simplify it, the better you are at understanding it. So we're going to seek to do that today because I think one of the biggest questions I still get, even from our own clients that have been listening to me talk about this endlessly for as long as they've been a client, they continue to ask me, Zach, I just don't understand why stocks keep going up. Why stocks keep going up? So we're going to talk about that in our first segment. The other thing I want to get to is the really, really interesting thing that I'm not really hearing anybody talk. Well, in my circles, I'm hearing people talk about it, and it's just kind of whispers at this point. But you're not going to hear about it in the media. And I spoke about it recently this week on a couple of other podcasts that I was on. And it's the inflation report that we've gotten out. Many of you are aware of it. Inflation came in hotter than expected, and economic activity was low. It was a miss on GDP. I think it came in at 1.8% for the quarter, which I will just tell you, that's even lower than we were expecting. I thought that print would have been higher than that. But anyway, it's in most things, and this is what I was referencing in the warm-up here. When you listen to that GDP report, the most interesting and the most unnerving and the most noteworthy part of that inflation report is probably nothing that you're going to hear about you know, on financial news or on the news at large regarding that inflation report. So I want to break down for you guys what really was important in that PCE number that came out. And then the in the last segment of the show today, I want to discuss something that came out of Trump's camp. I believe it came out last night regarding Trump considering or thinking about, you know, drastically reworking the Fed or something like, you know, something along those lines. It's hard to take this serious. You don't really know if it was real coming out of his camp. If it's, you know, who knows, right? It's not something that they've openly discussed. I will say this. It doesn't sound out of step with the things that Trump and his camp have said before, but I do think it's something really interesting that we need to dig into. But until then, let's stick with the market update here. So what do we got going on this week? Obviously, I think the biggest piece of data or the most important thing that occurred this week, in our opinion, was the inflation numbers and the you know, economic numbers as far as growth. And man, I'm trying hard to stay away from that one because we're going to talk about that in the next segment. What was really important about that inflation report that really nobody's talking about, okay? So until then, but the second thing that was the most important, I think, were big tech earnings. And much to our thrill, if you will, you guys have heard me lament and moan and groan about valuation discrepancies in this market that make no sense to me, right? And many of you know, certainly the clients do, that I've used Google as a test case. Now, before I say this, I want to reiterate, as always, this is not a recommendation for you to buy any of the stocks I'm talking about. It's not a recommendation for you to short any of the stocks I'm talking about. I don't even know if these are appropriate for you. And just because you're a client of ours doesn't mean that you would own them. Okay. Just want to be sure about that. Okay. But I don't know if you guys are watching Google, but Google had a nice quarter, nice announcement, going to issue a dividend and a big stock buyback. This is why Google was the biggest position of our portfolio. Now, remember, it's a portfolio that is not just built on that. We've also got substantial positions in, you know, natural resource type stuff. But one of the biggest reasons we were invested in Google the way we were is just kind of an arbitrage. And I feel very confident. And what I mean by that is that somehow it's never made any sense to me. Google's valuation has not made sense to me in relationship to the other Meg 7 type companies for quite some time. It really hasn't made any sense to me compared to an Apple or a Netflix, et cetera. I am still very much of the belief, and I think there's a lot of data to back this up, that one of the biggest winners and one of the biggest players in AI is going to be Google, whether you like them or not. Does Google's corporate culture bother me a little bit? Yeah, I'm concerned with any company that I'm invested in that doesn't have a woke underlying to it. And it's not about necessarily political ideology, but I mean, it's ridiculous. I got no problem saying that out loud. I mean, it's going to be really hard to get me fired up about owning a company that's putting people in management positions because of what they are, as opposed to what they do. Right? I think that's a statement that we can make across all of the United States. What made us great, and what will make us great, and what will make us not racist, and what will make us not misogynistic and sexist and anti-Semitic and Islamophobic and all that kind of stuff, is what we are. Meaning, you get ahead in this country not by what you are, but what you do, regardless of the color of your skin or creed or nationality or whatever the case may be. So does it concern me when I see companies not? Yes, right? That approach, that attitude built the biggest, most robust, strong economy in the history of humankind and the biggest superpower in the history of humankind. And oh, by the way, something that gets lost in translation these days is the most compassionate, giving country of all time. Do we have our faults? Of course. It's not a country on God's green earth that doesn't. But Zach, the history of slavery, show me a territory or a country in the entire world that at some point did not have slavery. Do I condone it? Absolutely not. If slavery was still legal here, my family wouldn't exist. Okay, but we live in a world right now where nonsense and BS are treated as factual And the actual, right, the non-political factual side of it is in complete disagreement with all the nonsense. So let me pull that back, a little cultural aside there, but let me pull that back in relationship to Google. One of the things that's given me a little bit of hope there, first of all, is I talked on a podcast about it today. There's a biblical verse, and I'm forgetting at the moment right where it is. I've got it written down in multiple different places, but where it talks about being in the world but not of it. And I was talking about on the Todd Herman podcast this week, he had me on there, and I was saying that I think that's true in investing today, meaning that one of the biggest needs I think I see for a portfolio today and going forward is going to be a portfolio that has inflation protection, right? So if you think about what that means, inflation protection, what does that mean? It means the erosion of the value of our currency, right? Or the currency of a system. And sometimes, or oftentimes, or virtually all the time, if you want to protect yourself from the current, because we can't really opt out of the dollar, right? It's also one of the funny things, I think. I obviously have lines I won't cross in investing, which is anything linked to pornography or that could even have slight links to sexual trafficking or anything like that. It's just a no-go for me. You know, outside of that, I personally don't have an issue investing in companies that make alcoholic beverages or tobacco, because those are legal things that are up to adults that can be used responsibly and are not for the sole purpose of denigrating and ruining people. Whereas I don't think you can make the case that that is also the scenario on the other side of it with pornography and things like that. I just think it's incredibly pernicious. I think it's dehumanizing to the people involved and all those issues. But my point in all of that is saying we can't opt out of the dollar. And I think a lot of people see the state of the U.S. I mean, look, I still love what America is. Don't get me wrong. And I love the country and the ideals that it was founded on. But there's just a lot of things that I have huge disagreements with our government. Right. And the point that I'm trying to make is people go, well, I don't believe in what Google does. Well, yeah, but you don't believe a lot of things the U.S. government does, too. And I don't see that making you opt out of the dollar. My point is this: to completely try to protect ourselves in a wise and responsible way from the currency being devalued in the system that we currently live in, a currency that we currently get paid by. Right? I still don't hear people talking about the fact they made 2.7 Bitcoin last year. People still refer to their incomes in dollars. So what that means is we have to use things inside of that system, right? If we're married to that to some degree, we got to use things that will hold up well or do well to preserve our wealth in terms of that currency. And some of these big tech companies that we may not even like, they're a part of that. Why? One of the biggest reasons I like Google is because it's a monopoly. Do I wish it was not a monopoly? Yes. Do I think that laws should be changed to make these companies less of monopolies? Yes. Do I think their monopolization is hurting the economy? Yes. But it's not the company's fault. Right? If we believe in free markets, that is actually one of the roles of government in the preservation of free markets, is to ensure that monopolies don't take over. Now, I know I've got even clients of mine who come in and go, no, Zach, I'm a purist. You got to let the market figure it out. I just ardently disagree. I believe to have free market capitalism, you must have balance and you must have competition. And when you have monopolies, you do not have balance and competition. Now, but this gets me back to Google. So if there are people out there that go, I don't believe in Google. Okay, I know. I get what you're saying. And there are things that I don't like about them either. But we don't get to choose the system. You don't get to choose what currency your job pays you in. So that means we've got to use investments that will protect you in those same terms. And as long as some of these big tech, now there's some that we don't want because I think that they're overvalued or I'm not as a big believer in their businesses. But if we live in a system of dollars, the biggest, most efficient money-making machines, whether you like it or not, are those big tech companies. And one of the things that encourages me about them is they are real businesses. And I think you can see that from what Google has done recently, is they had the stand-ins or the sit-ins there, and they fired a bunch of people. And they're, you know, different folks in management basically came out and didn't say anything crazy, but just kind of said, look, this has gotten out of hand. Okay. And we're putting adults back into the room here. And I think that's a good development for their company as well as for our culture. But anyway, long story short, this is one of those reasons why we must understand the fundamental side. Now, guys, we'll get them wrong too, but I'm just using this as an example of why value investing will always work. There are going to be times where it does not. Owning Google has not been fun compared to the other Meg Sevens over a pretty extended period of time. I mean, it has been one of the lower performers out of that group for, shoot, as long as they've been called the Meg Seven. But look at it now. It's broken out to new all-time highs while all the other Meg Sevens are bumping their head, except NVIDIA is not at an all-time high, but they're bumping their heads up against the previous all-time highs. And then you look over at Google and they had another great quarter. Another great quarter. Killed it. And finally, for whatever reason, that got market's attention. And it was nice for us. Our biggest position, our biggest single position in the non-constrained value portfolio was Google, and still is. Again, not advising you to buy it or sell it, but I'm just saying this is why I think it's an example of why, A, as long as companies aren't doing things – and this is how I see it. Now, you may not see it this way, but as long as companies are not doing things – you know, that are illegal or right fraudulent or things like that, and that don't directly conflict with our morals. People go, well, Google does. Yeah, but remember, Google was also standing up for its right to offer computer assistance to Israel, right? Server assistance and cloud assistance and all that kind of stuff. So is it ideal? No, there's political things and there's cultural things that I disagree with what they do. But it, like I said, at the same time, we don't get to choose the game we play. So anyway, Google hit the ball out of the park. I think they're finally getting appreciated. Hopefully this will be a re-rating on their stock that I think they've deserved for quite a while. That's me, not me telling you I know it's going to go up or anything like that. But I just, again, you look around and you start comping it to other companies and you're like, it's just a head scratcher. You look at their margins, you look at their revenue growth, and there's all kinds of examples like that over this market, more than I've ever seen. And I may not agreed with different valuations, but usually there's some kind of uniformity to it. Now you're just all over the place. On the flip side of that was Tesla, right? Tesla came out and announced earnings, and they were horrific. And Tesla came into it still really expensive, really overvalued. As a matter of fact, a guy I know that I'm currently trying to get on the show, Mr. Jim Chanos, famous short seller, is the guy that tipped over the whole Enron deal, uncovered the whole Enron deal. He was saying recently that he still thinks that Tesla is more egregiously valued than NVIDIA. And I agree with him. But yeah, Tesla has a really bad quarter. They had revenue declines, actually. So negative growth, right? Revenue declines for the first time since 2012, and the stock's up 15% since they announced. Why? Musk was talking about AI robots and and a new cheaper car, even though they don't even have one in the books. Tesla insiders are saying, or some that I have seen, that the statement is that if they want to bring a new car to market, it's going to be very difficult for them because they don't currently have the factory capacity to do it, which means they'd have to manufacture it on the lines that they're currently using for the Model Y and the Model 3. And that means it would significantly disrupt the production of those. Anyway. It feels like kind of another – it feels like Tesla was getting pounded and Musk came out and tried to deliver some more vaporware to encourage the shareholders. And I'm not saying he's lying. I'm saying I'm sure he intends to do these things. But it continues to amaze me how these people will just, you know, eat it up. But I don't think Musk is lying per se. I don't think he's lying about his desire to develop full self-driving and have robo-taxis. I just think, and I'll continue, we've been saying this for years. I just think full self-driving is a lot further out than most people think. And the more and more data that we're seeing, I'm watching a lot of people that I respect in that space also saying the same thing. They're like, look, we're just not nearly as close on this as people think. then there's so much dynamism in Full Self-Driving. Anyway, he comes out, disaster of a quarter, though, pushes the stock right back up. So go figure. Meta on the flip side, another bit of a head scratcher. As a matter of fact, putting Meta's results next to Tesla's were kind of amusing. Meta knocked it out of the park. I mean, I want to say revenue growth in the mid-20s, year over year, crushed on all sides of it. But Zuckerberg came out and really was talking it down, and he was really focusing on the investments and the spend that are coming up, which I also think is a fairly good sign on their part, which means that I think he learned the lesson from how hard he went in and was spending CapEx initially on the metaverse. And even though I think it was unfair, because he gave plenty of room to investors and warned them about the big $20 billion spend on the metaverse. But when the news came out, the market freaked out. It was another funny thing. It was kind of, you're sitting back going, why is everybody fire selling the stock? We all knew it was going to spend $20 billion. And we've talked about it we got lucky enough to get out of Meta because we thought it was going to hit the stock. And the reason we thought it was going to hit the stock is because he'd been pre-announcing this big spend, and it was supposed to be reflected in the Q1 of 2022, I believe. Was it 2022 or 20? Anyway. And the market didn't react to it. And so as actually a buddy of mine that works at a hedge fund, he's like, yeah, we switched out of Amazon because, you know, we're afraid that big spend is going to hit the stock and there's going to be a big sell-off. And I was like, yeah, but they've told everybody about it, right? Securities are supposed to price this stuff in. And to his credit, he was like, I know, but it hasn't responded yet. And so we're just kind of sitting there thinking, geez, well, if it hasn't responded yet, it's going to show up at the next quarter and you know, there'll have to be the response then. Well, I heeded his advice and just went, you know, I guess you're right. So we actually took our profits at Meta at that time and got out of the way. But I never dreamed it would have gotten hit as hard as it did. You know, I wish I could say, yeah, we sidestepped that mess. It was kind of accidental, and it was kind of lucky on our part. But then you set them out today. They knocked the – then Meta sells off by 15% after crushing it because people are worried about the spend. I actually felt encouraged by it. A, I think that Zuckerberg was front-loading the worst-case scenario because he learned his lesson. I also think he's trying to be more communicative and more transparent because he learned his lesson. I mean, shoot, what did that – I mean, that led like a – what was that, a 65% plunge on Meta or something like that? It was crazy. Another one I think was really interesting, guys, was Newmont. Now, Newmont is a gold miner. They came out and the numbers on the surface weren't too impressive, but it was the things that they said. The stock was up 13% after hours. Newmont is a gold miner, by the way, one of the largest in the world. And this kind of goes into our gold miner thesis at this point. Now, like, look, if gold moves drastically lower, that thesis goes away. But right now, it's amazing for us to sit there and look at the prices on these gold miners because they're acting as if gold's trading at $1,500 an ounce. And it's not. It's pressing $2,400. So, I gold needs to keep going up for these gold miners to be good investments. But at the same time, with gold right where it is and oil where it is, these things are going to be throwing off massive cash flow. Now, there's always going to be in the idiosyncratic ones that don't because of issues in their particular property or local government or something like that. But generally speaking, looking at that whole sector, it's just dirt cheap. And there's a lot of guys that disagree with me. We'll follow up with a little bit after the break. We got to take a quick break. Stick with us. We will be right back. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
With the election looming, continued global unrest, rising cost of living, and this crazy market volatility, the rest of this year could be a wild ride. Protecting retirement portfolios with risk management is critical.
That's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark and host of Know Your Risk Radio's podcast. Zach, at our first meeting, Bulwark opened my eyes to how exposed my portfolio really was.
We do that with everyone. Our Know Your Risk portfolio review is a great way to see if you're overexposed to risk. It's free and there's no obligation. In fact, we don't let anyone invest with us at our first meeting. Whether you become a client or not, I can promise you this, you'll leave much more informed about the risks to your retirement.
I know I did. Look, you only get one retirement. Don't risk it. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com.
Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Thank you for sticking with us. Okay, so just to wrap up market update, that the new getting back to Newmont, that gold company, up 13% after hours. One of the things that's the most encouraging to me is over the course of the last week and a half, miners got hit a little bit, but I don't think they were hit quite. Maybe they were, but they've bounced back nicely to actually, I believe, the same level, if not higher now today than they were prior to last week, even though the price of gold is down. Why do I think that? Look, all of this is anecdotal, but the reason I think that is because in previous big bull runs for metals, specifically gold, there's an interplay between the miners. Typically, the miners lead in anticipation of higher gold prices. This time is a little bit different. The miners have lagged. That's happened before, though. But there's an interplay. And typically, the miners will give you the best sign of how durable the move in gold is. And I think it's really interesting that even in that pullback you had in gold, and it was pretty violent, at least for that one day. I mean, shoot, I think gold dropped in that one day. It was $100 in a session. I mean, it round-tripped it. It was pretty wild. It was interesting to me the miners did not break and really didn't get too close to breaking that downside support. And by downside support, I think if you're looking at GDX, I think we pinned that right around like 3187. They got down there in the mid-32s, but they've bounced back really nicely without a significant move higher in gold. And like I said, I don't – if gold hangs around here, the miners, it's going to be – it's just tough for me to see that sector not doing well just off of earnings. And again, there will be idiosyncratic issues. There always are with miners, which is why when you're using – and I will give you a piece of advice that I think everybody can use. If you're going to be an investor in gold, I've always believed that the best way to do it was to have a combination – and I think this is true of any commodity, quite frankly. But actually, that's not true. I think most for gold. I think it is acceptable to have both miners and metals at times. Because what you want to ensure is that you don't miss out, right? And what I mean by that is if you think gold's going to go up and you're with me that you think the miners are a part of an allocation to gold or can be a valuable one, you don't want to try to find your favorite gold miner and make that the one position, right? Because what if you're right about the move in gold, but what if something that was unforeseeable, like a foreign government seizing a company's biggest mine just because they want it, right? So you could be right on your call on gold and pick the wrong horse and completely miss the party and get wrecked. So in that light, I think GDX, if you're going to have positions in gold miners, I think GDX should be a part of it. Now, what we do is we usually have a combination. The Times will own some of the metal and some of the miners, and we might pick out some smaller positions for our favorite miners, but then also have a chunk of GDX. Why? So we don't miss the move, right? You're going to have scares. It's the way commodity cycles work, but gold continues to look really strong. And when you look at the macro backdrop, our government spending money like a whole aircraft full of drunken sailors, it's hard for me to really see. Well, I shouldn't say it's hard for me to see it going down meaningfully. I can imagine anything going down meaningfully. If you do this job long enough, you can imagine anything bad happening. But at least with the macro and fundamental backdrop of what our government doing is and what the vast majority of governments are doing, I think it's a really good setup. And actually, I think what came out in that inflation report that we're going to get to in the next segment, I think that was also bullish for gold. So let's first start though. I know that we're still new in Texas. We're on two different stations in Texas. And mean, even though we've talked, I feel like we'd be, it's hard. Sometimes it's hard doing a radio show because when certain subjects come up, you'll try to avoid discussing it because you feel like that you've just kicked the tar out, you've beaten the tar out of that dead horse. But when I keep hearing these same topics and these same questions and these same, issues popping up, it tells me that we probably haven't addressed it enough. And the one that I keep getting, even from our own clients, even though I feel like I've talked it to death, is I just don't understand why stocks keep going up. And I get it. And I fight that every day. And the reason I fight it every day is because I am a fundamental person, meaning I grew up that way. I was trained to look at fundamentals. It's also just the way that my brain works. I want to dig into something. I want to see what the real value of it is. The idea of buying vaporware and I don't know. And you shouldn't really care because it doesn't matter how you make money. It just matters that you do. I've just never found it nearly as intellectually appealing and I found it to be more stressful than riding the momentum of some investment I don't understand rather than buying investments that I really understand and truly believe are undervalued. And so when I look at the market in that light, it's really like, for instance, it's very hard for me to look at the valuations of some of these quote unquote tech companies and then go compare them to the valuations of some of these gold or miners or copper miners or whatever. Now, I understand the market's narrative around why it's priced like that. But at the end of the day, I sit there and I go, look, at the end of the day, it's cash flow, right? And the only thing I really care about when it comes to that conversation is green, right? So it's in that way, it's a very confounding market. But the reason it keeps going up now, and to be fair, we're not at the all-time highs. So we've been kind of going sideways to a slight downward bias here for the last couple of weeks. But why do they keep going up? It's because the money hasn't stopped being printed. It's currency devaluation, plain and simple. People are like, Zach, you said the currency is still strong. Yeah. And this is a point I've tried to make all along. And I actually am thinking about putting a video out and trying to explain this. Our currency is being devalued. It's just being devalued against assets, not other currencies, right? People are like, yeah, the dollar is going to collapse. No, it doesn't work that way, right? When we talk about dollar collapse, what we're talking about is the dollar devaluing against other currencies. And the dollar index is still at 105, which is historically high, especially in the last 20 years. Yeah, it's way at the high end of the range. It's not the highest, but it's way up there. But remember, that's just valuing it against other currencies. And this is why I've always said when people use the term dollar collapse, I cringe because I completely disagree. To say dollar collapse means it's going to collapse against another currency and another currency is better. And that's just not the case. And I think that that's been proven over and over despite all the talking heads on TV. It was like, and I've said this over and over as well, that's why in 2022, you had the highest realized inflation we've seen in 40 years, and the dollar index hit a 25-year high, right? Because that metric, dollar collapse, is comparing us to other governments. And when you compare us to other governments, we are still the cleanest dirty shirt. We're an export. We're the only country that is a net exporter of both food and fuel. And that's really important because when inflation gets really pernicious, those are two of the things that hamstring economies the most, food and fuel. We're net exporters. What does that mean? That we are able to internally supply those at ample amounts, right? And that's an insulation. We still have the biggest, most robust economy. We still have the biggest military, the most technologically advanced military. We're still leading the world in AI technology and chip manufacturing and all these other things. So that's what we now, does that mean that our government is not being profligate and completely reckless? No, of course they are, but you're going to see it in asset price appreciation. And that's why stocks keep going up, because that money has to go somewhere. We always hear people refer to money as liquidity. It's a really good example, right? You pour water all over the place. Where is it going to go? It's going to go to the lowest point, the point of least resistance. Where's the point of least resistance in our economy for excess capital? The stock market. Everybody has access. Everybody knows we're in a raging bull market. You can throw crypto in there too, right? They're perfect cisterns for excess liquidity. And and this is, in large part, this is what happens, at least in the early stages. Now, in the later stages of inflation, what you tend to see is you tend to see actually profits and revenues rising, but asset prices not. And the reason for that is even though profits and revenues may be rising, they're not rising as fast as costs are, which is what that's basically the scenario that played out from 1966 to 1981 during our last big bout of inflation and when the stock market went nowhere for 15 years, which is another shameless plug point for Bulwark Capital, right? Meaning, we're not sitting there saying that we've got a crystal ball. Nobody does. What we do think looks pretty, pretty obvious to us, or at least we think it's something that we should be prepared for, is that I think it looks like it's pretty good odds that we're going to deal with inflation for a much longer period of time and probably for at greater levels with greater impacts than most of us have seen in our lifetimes. And if that's the case, we also need to think about that. And in my mind, we need to look at previous periods of inflation. And so if we're just rummaging along with the S&P 500 and the triple Qs and the 60-40 stock bond portfolio, I don't think it is an illogical exercise to compare and go, hey, you know, our advisor's telling this is all good. This portfolio has worked really good for us over the last 15 years. But I think it's pretty obvious that things have certainly changed here. Now, all of a sudden, we're dealing with inflation for the first time since the 70s. How would this portfolio have performed over that whole bout of inflation over the 70s? And it would have gotten destroyed. Destroyed. What did inflation average, like 9% a year? The stock market was flat for 15. That's devastation. And I'm not even talking about the bond side of it. Do you know what happened to bond prices over that period of time? When rates went from 5% or what, somewhere around 5%, I want to say, in 1966, maybe they're even lower than that, but got up to as high as 18, 19, bonds got destroyed. So if you were just in that typical portfolio in the last bout of inflation, you got wrecked. However, had you had a portfolio that was actually diversified, had exposure to natural resources and commodities in amounts that actually mattered, not overloaded, true diversification. Had you had exposure to international markets outside of the United States that could take advantage of the dollar going lower, you went from being destroyed on a real basis over 15 years to having a great run. Oil went from 2 to 20. Gold went from 35 to 850. Emerging markets boomed. Japan boomed. And that's, you know, we talk about it and it's crazy to me that you have to actually sell this. I'm looking at people going, guys, what does this look like to you? Why for the last 15 years, well, Zach, it's worked so well. Yeah, because you have a portfolio that was literally designed for a low interest rate environment. That's changed. You had a portfolio that was designed for a low growth environment. That's all changed. Don't you think the allocation your portfolio needs to as well? Wouldn't you sleep a little better knowing that you had some of those other parts to your... Well, I do, Zach. It's the S&P 500. Really? Go look into the S&P 500 and show and go see how much exposure it actually gives you to these other asset classes. It's the lowest on record. I don't think there's a single gold. Is there a single? I don't think there's a single gold or silver mining company in the S&P 500. I think the energy companies now represent like a 3.5-4% position in the S&P 500, somewhere around there. Maybe 5%, when traditionally it's been like 12 to 16%. You're all tech. It's a one-way bet. And I'm not saying it's about to crash. What I'm saying is, if it's like other periods of times in the past. And here's the funny thing. We've gotten a nice run in gold. We've made some nice money on uranium. We've made some nice money on our energy stocks. But here you are over the course, despite how excited everybody is, you've had all this inflation, right? Look at the markets. What are they up 5-6% over the last 2.5 years? that kind of feels like a market that's moving really violently up and down, but it's really not going anywhere. Now, guys, again, I don't have a crystal ball. I'm not telling you it's going to play out just like the 70s. As a matter of fact, I would bet my bottom dollar doesn't play out just like the 70s. Will there be things that are like it? I would think so. And that's the real dangerous part of this. You got a portfolio that just is not geared for that at all. And if you don't believe me, call your advisor. Ask him, in that current portfolio, how much exposure do I have to metals? How much exposure do I have to copper? How much exposure do I have to energy? And what are the average exposures of those kinds of things historically in the S&P 500? And what you will find out, you take for word for it, but don't. Go ask your guy. What you'll find out is you've got a historically low allocation to those things. I also think it's a market that's going to be very violent, moving all over the place, and which is going to require quick pivots and adjustments. And I'm not talking about random tactical trying to trade and catch everything. I'm just saying, in crazy environments like this, you need to be able to tack quickly, which I think puts another emphasis on our active management. And then, as always, risk management, right? What kind of protection do we have? Because this is a scary environment. What if something weird happens and all of a sudden the government can't print and boom, reality hits us in a minute? We got to have protection. We got to have all those things. That's my belief. But I think it sounds pretty sound. Sounds pretty sound. How's that for putting it together? Anyway, if that resonates with you, and I think it should, but if that resonates with you, give us a call. Just hear how we do it. Hear what we have to say. 866-779-RISK and 866-779-RISK. Obligates you to nothing, guys. You talk to one of me or my advisors. We can look at your portfolio, let you know how you're really positioned, what your real cost is, contrast that with what we do for you, give you a cost estimate, send you on your way, and tell you, give us a call if you'd like to proceed. But at the very least, I think educating yourself about these things and what else out there is available, I just don't see how that could be a waste of time. Don't see how that could be a bad move. So anyway, give us a call, 866-779-RISK and 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, boardcapitalmanagement.com. You guys know the drill. We'll be right back with our final segment. Stick with us through the break. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
With the election looming, continued global unrest, rising cost of living, and this crazy market volatility, the rest of this year could be a wild ride. Protecting retirement portfolios with risk management is critical.
That's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark and host of Know Your Risk Radio's podcast. Zach, at our first meeting, Bulwark opened my eyes to how exposed my portfolio really was.
We do that with everyone. Our Know Your Risk portfolio review is a great way to see if you're overexposed to risk. It's free and there's no obligation. In fact, we don't let anyone invest with us at our first meeting. Whether you become a client or not, I can promise you this, you'll leave much more informed about the risks to your retirement.
I know I did. Look, you only get one retirement, so don't risk it. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com.
Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Thank you for sticking with us. Okay. Shocker, went a little long on that last segment, so I got to combine these last two. But I think the most important thing that came up over the week was that inflation report and GDP report. And what did we see? We saw GDP miss. Most people thought GDP was going to come in for the quarter. I think most of the estimates were between like 2.6 and 3.0. And it came in at 1.8. Now, on the surface of it, what I will tell you is that looks like a big miss. When we dug into the components of it, I don't think it appears to us that it was more one-off issues. And the way we looked at that is that the consumer spending portion of it wasn't as weak as you would think from that 1.8% number. So I would say this, it's certainly a disappointing number in terms of what people were expecting growth to be, but I don't think we should read too much into it. It's still a one-off quarter. Could it be the part of a beginning of a slowdown? Sure could. And you can't dismiss that, but I don't think that's the most important part. Because what else was interesting is that all inflation metrics now, including that PCE, that core inflation number that the Fed is looking at, while GDP came in less than expected, all of those inflation numbers came in hotter than expected and notably hotter. Now, why that is important is that flies in the face of one of the bedrocks of what the Fed, for, in my opinion, foolishly believes, which is that inflation is an obligatory result or an obligatory partner of growth, meaning that they're synonymous, right? That of course, with economic growth, you get inflation. And that's true most of the time, but we've also had periods of this country where we've had growth rates, you know, 3 to 4 and inflation south of 2. So you don't have, but that's what the Fed believes, even though there are multiple examples of that not being the case. And so what's so interesting is to see what appears to be a bit of an economic slowdown while inflation is persisting, if not actually accelerating. Now, why is that so interesting? What do you call it when economic growth is declining and yet prices are not going down and maybe even going up? It's called stagflation. Okay. You've got deflation, you got inflation. And the most pernicious one of all is stagflation. And why is that? Because one of the only benefits of inflation, right? Let's say you've got a big pile of debt like we do. One of the only benefits of inflation is that the price of assets will grow in dollar terms, the size of the economy will grow in dollar terms, and hopefully that growth, rather than paying down the debt, if we can grow enough, that will make the percentages more wonky. For instance, so we're 150% debt to GDP. Let's say we could hold the debt there for the next 10 years and continue to grow the economy at 5%, right? The amount of debt we have would be coming annually, it'd be coming down as a percentage of the economy, right? So it's not fun that things are getting more expensive, but it's right sizing the size of the economy and the price of assets and the price of the stock market to the amount of debt and making that relationship look more manageable. Well, in a stagflationary environment, you get all the cost and none of the benefit. You get the rising prices, but you don't see higher wages. You don't see accelerating economic demand. You don't see accelerating economic growth. The other more pernicious thing about that is you've got a Fed who has treated every single problem and a U.S. government that has treated every single problem with the exact same medicine. More money, less rates, right? In a stagflationary environment, that doesn't help. Because inflation is what is killing things. And if you print more and try to issue more, that inflation only grows more pernicious. And in real terms, which is growth minus inflation, the problem gets worse rather than better. Now, I'm not, again, it's one quarter's reading. Okay, so I'm not saying that this has happened. What I'm saying is we should pay attention. Because if you play this game long enough, now long enough could take 30 years. I'm not saying it's tomorrow. But if you play this long enough, this game long enough, it's just like treating somebody with antibiotics, right? There's some unbelievable Z-Packs, right? There's some incredible antibiotics out there. But if you use the same ones with every single illness, you eventually render them ineffective. And eventually you run into a scenario where you need that antibiotic and it's your only hope, but it doesn't work. Monetary policy is much the same, right? It works so well the first time that you keep using it. And then eventually you got a system that's so out of whack, you can't keep using it. And eventually you run into a scenario where it doesn't work. And that's when really bad things happen. And that's one of the reasons, that's one of the pieces of sobriety that we as investors must keep in our mind, because staying long some of these stocks, staying long these markets at times is going to feel out of control. It's going to feel crazy. We're looking around going, we got to be right around a drop. Then we got to remember, things aren't just going up because everybody's so excited. They're going up because they're just devaluing the currency in comparison to assets. We're spending money like drunken sailors. But at the same time, we also have to have that layer of risk management underneath there, because we know that at any point it could come apart. Is this difficult? Yeah. Is it complicated? Yeah. But again, this is why I feel such a high level of conviction that the average investor portfolio in this environment feels like a death trap. It certainly was in the 70s. And maybe it turns out that that's not the case. Maybe we get through this whole process and we go, you know what? We could have done okay sitting in the market and bonds over that period of time. Zach, if that's the outcome, great, right? It means that pretty much anything's going to work. Maybe this works a little bit better. Maybe that works a little bit. That's not the point. What if that is the case? What if it does play out like the 70s and you're in that portfolio? You're smoked. You're done. Remember, most of the people in the 70s weren't relying on their portfolios. They were relying on pensions. You're relying on your portfolio. If that same scenario plays out again, you're wrecked. Prices go up by 9% a year and your portfolio doesn't grow. That is not an acceptable outcome. It's not an acceptable risk. Can't guarantee it's going to happen. Nobody can. But if your portfolio is not geared against that risk, what are you doing? You can see it. It's knocking on your front door. There's a solution, though. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. We can drastically lower the overall risk of your portfolio, guys, without sacrificing upside. And a lot of times we can offer more upside and have portfolios that where everything we own has a layer of defense. Doesn't mean we can't lose, but it means we can build a portfolio that's not capable of that catastrophic loss while still capturing the upside. There's a better way. And if it plays, you know, as always, and if it plays out really similar to what we think, we can kill it. But risk management's what's needed. And if that resonates to you, give us a call. It should resonate. I would think so, man, in this backdrop. I would think so. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK, and 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. You guys know the drill. Wanted to get to the Trump issue with the Fed comments he made. We'll include that in the Daily Dots on Monday so you guys won't miss it. Have a great weekend. We got to run. Thank you, and we'll see you next week. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham now at knowyourriskradio.com. Zach will be back with more Know Your Risk Radio next Saturday at noon on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.